This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Howdy, what up? How you doing today? Tiki and Tierney ready to go. CBS Sports Radio. No TV today. Just our wonderful voices bringing some great topics to you. And we're coming from our Rocket Mortgage studio. When an expert helps navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. On Jackie Robinson Day, we'll spend a lot of time on that later for sure. No doubt, the great Jackie Robinson. Got Matt Entz on the show. He is the coach over at North Dakota State, the head football coach, Trey Lance. Obviously a very important name pertaining to draft board. Speaking of the draft, you know, Trevor Lawrence, some comments that are alarming to some. We'll dissect them. And, of course, a little Philly, Brooklyn. Brooklyn's in a house. Say, well, Tink, how you doing today,
buddy? Last night they were in the house. After being down by 20-plus at certain points in that game. But they made it a game at the end.
That's true. They did.
Despite missing two of their big stars. Kyrie played. We weren't sure what he would do, but he did play.
He played great, too. Kyrie was insane.
Dude, he's amazing. They're triple-teaming him. Doesn't matter. He's getting the shots off.
It's the best season he's ever had. He's never been this good, and he's been great.
I wonder, BT, you know, we keep knocking him for taking these personal days, but it feels like for the first time in a really long time, I'm not worried about Kyrie Irving missing games because of his health. You see, you know, I'm joking, but I know what you're saying. I'm being serious. The last couple of years, it's been something or another, whether it was a shoulder or I forget what he had at the end up in Boston, whatever it was. It seems like he's always banged around these last couple of years. This year, he's taking maintenance days and just calling them personal days.
I don't even think that you necessarily think that. I know what you mean because I feel like it's a lot deeper than that with Kyrie.
No, it definitely is. There's no doubt about it.
But the one thing about that, even if that were the case, and I don't think that it is, but if it were, you know, that's okay for now. Well, it's somewhat okay. I still wouldn't love it. But, you know, he can't be doing this when they're trying to win a championship. And this, the NBA Finals can run through as late as July 22nd. So he might be able to pull over to the shoulder and gas up a little bit now. But he's not going to be doing that in the playoffs.
No.
And if he is, they might get bounced before they should.
Yeah, you're right. He's got to get ready for the grind, which is constant, nonstop travel, everything else, and be available every single night and play like he did last night. Yep. And if everybody else is healthy, then this Nets team is still going to be hard to beat. Now, obviously they lost last night to the 76ers, and God, BT, did you see them trying to defend Joel Embiid?
Oh, Joel Embiid, there was the one move where he fell down, but he had almost like a Euro step in the end one. Oh my God, he kind of almost put his arms to the crowd and imploring him like, hey, look at me, I'm back to being me, basically. He is a freak show how good he is, man.
I don't know how the Nets, even when, you know, whoever the big is, whether it's DeAndre Jordan or Jeff Green was in there. Mm-hmm. Aldridge obviously is retired, and we'll get to that in a second. But I don't know if they have a big man, enough of them. They have a bunch to throw enough fouls at him, seriously, to like frustrate him and make him, you know, pissed off at him. He dominated against Brooklyn last night, and that's something to be worried about.
Well, yeah, I think that's one of the main reasons why they picked up Aldridge, and you know, he did retire. He decided to step away from the game. A terrific career, not a Hall of Famer, but a really, really good player. Bunch of All Star games. You know, he squeezed out to his mid 30s. Did a lot. I believe it's seven All Star games. Pardon me, seven for him. And you know, he's a big guy. He's 6'11", 250, 255, and not that he himself would ever deter Joel Embiid from doing what he wants. But, you know, cumulatively, which is your point, you know, you run DeAndre Jordan at him for about a 4 or 5 minute stint, then you throw Aldridge on him, you know, and you kind of mix and match a little bit, and that's 12 fouls. That's about 500 pounds combined weight. at least maybe you have a bit of a puncher's chance. It's funny, like, the Aldridge pickup wasn't incredibly lauded, and the retirement out of nowhere is not incredibly alarming. But I think it should be.
Yeah.
And last night was a great illumination as to why. Without Durant, without Harden, without Griffin, because let's face it, you know, Blake Griffin is not stopping Joel Embiid. You know, yeah, I know they got away from, yeah, I know they had to come back and win the game. Oh, it wasn't that impressive. You didn't play. But you know what? You won the game, first of all. And when the game was in the balance, there was no doubt who was going to win. Until there was an element of disinterest that kind of crept in.
That's right.
I don't know unless Ben Simmons guards Irving from the opening tip until the final buzzer, and he still won't stop him, but maybe contain him. Between that mismatch that favors Brooklyn and the Embiid matchup that favors Philly. It's very well. It's going to probably come down to coaching.
Yeah, I think you're right. But that's what makes the series so interesting, because these two teams are they just feel constructed differently, right? They feel like both of them have a unique strength that the other will have a hard time stopping, which will make it a fun series if this should turn out to be the Eastern Conference final series, which we all hope it will be, assuming Brooklyn or 76ers don't take a misstep once they get into the postseason. But that's why you wanted to watch this game last night, BT. Even though KD wasn't playing and even though James Harden is still out with that hamstring injury, I was interested to see what this Nets team was made of. Like, what would happen, you know, against a very good team when they were sub-excellent, because obviously their stars are out. They actually fought. And Steve Nash was talking, you know, after the game, I was watching the post game, how that second unit was, I mean, they played with a fire. Now, you're right, it was a bit of disinterest on the 76ers' part because they were up by 20-something. But at the end of the day, that's valuable. And we talked about that yesterday. I think it's valuable for the Nets to know that their second unit can go do some things even when their first unit isn't fully healthy.
I mean, listen, we are just completely married to the appeal, the star power of all these teams. I mean, obviously the Union in L.A., and hopefully those guys are fully healthy, LeBron and A.D., and then, you know, to a lesser extent, even though Kawhi's a champion and a beast, I mean, we're still waiting for Paul George to kind of catch up, and he's playing a lot better now. But that's a duel that gets a lot of pop. Obviously, even a year ago, the Harden and the Westbrook stuff, it didn't work out. But we devote all this energy to this stuff, right? To the two stars. And, you know, before Harden joined the Nets, the whole Kyrie and Durant union. And the truth of the matter is, over the course of, you know, any, I don't mean a first round or maybe not even a semifinal match, depending upon the conference in the year. But you get to the conference finals and you get to the NBA finals, and Teak, I mean, the guys off the bench, whether it's a Miller, you know, raining threes back in the day, you know, whether it's, you can just go down a laundry list. I mean, Robert Horry, just a list of guys who completely swayed the needle or alter the balance of power to series, and they weren't necessarily the headliners, but I think that's an interesting point. I still need to see the Nets superstars healthy, otherwise they're not going to win.
Yeah,
but that's a galvanizer. That's something you put in your back pocket. Next time they play, those guys who stepped up and played well last night for the Brooklyn Nets, they know that, and they may have even known it before the game, to be fair, because they've been playing pretty well without that.
Yeah.
But that just kind of reinforces. I think that's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a good
point. I mean, it'll be it'll be telling once they all get together, because we know, you know, what on paper means nothing really, because we saw this with the Clippers last year. On paper, they had one of the best benches in basketball. They had two stars, or really one superstar and another star, in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And we know what happened to them. They faltered because they didn't know how to play together. And once things got tight, when you got in a tough series, as is it's obviously going to happen, you need to know what rules and I don't know, responsibilities each and every guy has, right? And the only way to do that, to learn that into experiences, is to play together. They just haven't played together. What is it, 9 times this season?
Seven times this
season they played together. Like, that's not going to get it done when you get to crunch time against some really good teams in the postseason.
No, I agree. You know, and by the way, I want to go back to our Slack channel and take you behind the Tiki and Tierney curtain, right? So there's, to be honest, I mean, outside of this game, but it will, again, we'll definitely spend a ton of time on Jackie Robinson and the efforts with baseball, you know, not only to continue, because there's been a slight increase in the amount of, you know, young black players playing the game. In the 70s and the 80s, the number was in the teens, you know, at points, the high teens, almost 20%. And now, you know, it's obviously, you know, more high single digits, but there has been somewhat of a correction the past couple of years. It's slightly gone in the direction that led to more diversity. So, but we didn't really know what we were going to lead with, right? We have a good guest. I told you before, we'll talk to Trey Lance's college coach. We'll squeeze in all the usual stuff, the blast, inbounds, out of bounds, blah, blah, blah. But we're going back and forth on our Slack channel. And Santer, I have it in front of me. And Santer wrote, after we obviously determined that we'll go with the Philly and the Nets to start the show, Santer writes, and he's doing his job as a producer. I'm not taking a knock, even though I disagree with this premise. He writes, maybe even a Nash convo. And he says, has any rookie head coach had to deal with so much in his first year? And then, and I was busy, but then he responds, and, you know, he followed up on that initial whatever. And he, no, I'm sorry, I did write. I wrote, rookie head coaches should be blessed, should be so blessed to have any of those dudes at their reach on any given night. He has it easy, all right? And then Santa wrote back to all of us, between KD's return, then dealing for Harden, then Kyrie taking time off, plus COVID, then KD and Harden hurt again, then you add Blake and Aldridge, now Aldridge retiring. I mean, we got to give Nash some freaking credit. That's from Samter, right? And yeah, we'll give him some credit. But then I wrote back with this. And to me, you know, this is the separator. And of course, I believe that I'm right on this, and I'm sure he thinks that he's right. But, you know, I want to see where you stand. Or I think you're more with him. To me, you know, while the three superstars never play together, he has three of the 5 or 6 best players in the game. Mm-hmm. And you can make the contention at the absolute apex still of their powers. And at least one of those three true superstars, while they never play together, at least one of them has basically played every single game. Yeah. So let's poll the other rookie and second-year head coaches languishing with scrubs. Stop. Yeah. You know, it's so hard about what Steve Nash is doing.
Yeah, look, the only thing that you need to give Steve Nash credit for is managing all those guys. And this, because I don't think, I mean, maybe they are a little bit diva-ish, but I don't know. It feels like when they come to play, those guys come to play. It's not like they're superstars who were half-ass in it at any point. Like, when KD's on the court, he's all business. When James Harden's on the court, he's all business. When Kyrie's on the court, he's all business, right? And so even if all three aren't playing together, when one of them is, you're getting a superstar performance. It's actually no different than, think about the Golden State Warriors right now. They have one superstar. Mm-hmm. They have Steph Curry. And when Steph Curry's on, I mean, forget it. These last two nights, he's 53 and then 45.
He could have had 70 last night.
He stopped playing after the third quarter.
Could have had, maybe 70 is a stroke. He could have had 60.
BT, I wouldn't be surprised if he had 70. If it was a tight game and he had to keep knocking down threes, because he made 10 of them in three quarters, maybe he could have had 70. But it's like having Steph Curry, except for you get to mix and or pick and choose who your star is going to be. You know what I mean? So, I mean, do I feel for him a little bit? Yeah, because obviously he wants to be excellent and elite with all three of his stars playing together and managing their egos and managing their off days and managing their health and all that other stuff is challenging, especially for someone who's never done it before. But he's got a luxury, man, that you just never get. Not even Ty Lue, when he took over with the Cleveland Cavaliers, did he have that kind of luxury?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And that was exactly my point on the Slack channel. I mean, yeah, I'll give him credit. He's the second seed in the Eastern Conference, and he has had to deal with a lot of things. But what he's had to deal with is offset by what he's been given, largely, in my opinion.
Oh, and by the way, guys, teams don't want older players and just not useful to them anymore. Sure. Let's go pick up LaMarcus Aldridge.
Sure. Oh,
okay. Well, Blake. We'll get Blake Griffin. Yeah, it's all good.
Who, by the way, dunks in his first game with the Nets. Yeah, last night was a pretty good night in the NBA. First of all, that shot by Doncic was insane at the buzzer.
Yeah,
what a shot! And he got his foot behind the line.
That's Luka for you.
It was. That's right. 25% Bird, 25% Magic, 25% LeBron, 25% J. Kidd, 100% Transcendent. To me, like that, the way he released that shot under duress, that looked like the kind of shot you put up as a floater 5 feet away from the rim. That shot was, of difficulty was insane.
Yeah, the question is how much of it was luck?
You know what, Teak? He's done that a lot. Maybe not that shot.
But from way out there.
He's a beast. He's a beast, man. And is a creative beast.
Yeah.
With certain artists, right, whether it's the range of their vocal cords or the ability to just hammer out a guitar for 33 minutes straight without interruption or just a great wordsmith putting together a bunch of amazing chapters or poems, whatever lyric, whatever your artistry is. And Luka Doncic, now there's great basketball players, and then there's great basketball players who are also artists.
Yeah.
And he is an artist, and the truest definition, like in the truest sense of the word, I don't place any limitation on an artist. I just don't.
Yeah.
Like, I think he messes around in practice with that.
I'm watching it over right now.
It's insane.
I mean, he's leaning forward. The ball comes out of his hand at like 0.1 and a half. It's just crazy. Right? And he's almost falling down. It's like that Patrick Mahomes pass in the Super Bowl where he's, falling on the ground. And he just, throws it across his body and should have been caught, but it was dropped. That's what he looked like. I mean, talk about body control, but awareness to get it out of his hand before the shot clock goes off.
Yep.
And then obviously to get it on target. I mean, it's a pretty amazing shot.
So I saw that obviously watching the Nets and the Sixers. And Teak, I mean, listen, we can keep kind of pushing them to the side of the room, and by no means am I going to try to, present them as the most relevant tier right now. But Tom Thibodeau's building something with these Knicks, man. Mm. They rolled into New Orleans last night. A Pelicans team that's been playing well. They've won 3 or 4 straight. And the Knicks just smacked them, dude.
Yeah.
And Knicks win by double figures. I mean, the Knicks, what is the... They put out a tweet this morning. I'll pull it up real quick. I mean, I knew most of these, but when I saw some of these, I'm like, that's even more than I thought. Hold on. Okay. They are first in the NBA in opponents' points per game, defensively now. They are first in the NBA in opponents' field goal percentage. They are first in the NBA in opponents' three-point field goal percentage. And they are third in overall defensive rating. And they're tied for the most in holding teams under 100 points. 19 times. 19. The Knicks have, in the modern NBA, where no one plays D and nobody resists the rim, the Knicks have held teams to double-digit point totals 19 times.
Yeah, it's a lot. That's Thibodeau for you, though.
It's been fun.
When we first saw that he was going to be the hire, you worried that he was too old school for a very young team. But it turns out with a very young team of guys who aren't stars, right? Not even close to being superstars. Mm-hmm. Maybe eventually a couple of those guys will get there. Maybe Julius Randle, but right now it's like these guys want to win and they're buying in. And that's rare, I think, in today's sports world. Young players buying into a hard ass like Thibodeau.
They are a pleasure to watch, right? And I have sat through some slop for a decade. I mean, some scrubs, man. But what I think is changing, we got a break here, but what I think is really changing, and I've tried to warn some NBA fans, you know, I'm not going to spend too much time on the Knicks nationally. They're, you know, they're a couple of the games over 500. You got to read the room. You got to know, you know, you got to play the hits. I get it. But what's starting now, and this is what NBA fans don't want to have happen, trust me, is that the Knicks are now no longer viewed as poisonous. And they're not. And once that happens, you know, between World Wide West and Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau, now you know what happens? Now a superstar says, you know what? I'll go sign up for that. Let's go. And now you got something you've never had in the modern NBA, a machine. So we're a ways away from that. But there's been steps made this year that have not been made really since the Ewing days. So, Knicks fans, it's a lot of fun. But again, last night was just a good NBA night. The Doncic shot was crazy. The Nets come back and Philly holding on. Embiid was sick. Irving was sublime. So, good stuff. Let's get to this coming up next here. You know, we talk about in the different sports how we remember certain guys, different eras, the steroid era, as great as Alex Rodriguez was, and, you know, Manny Ramirez, one of the best righty hitters of all time, or David Ortiz, anybody that's, you know, implicated in the steroid stuff, right? You know, how will we remember them? Well, here's something else I think we need to incorporate. How will we remember NBA players who take all these maintenance days? Will it be held against them down the road when measured against their peers and former players who played pretty much every night? Looking forward to that convo. We'll hit that next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that first segment. A lot of hoops out of the chute. We'll do a little more here as well. Next segment, Matt Entz. Who's that? North Dakota State head football coach. He coaches Trey Lance. It's a big name. You should know it. Of course you do. Next hour, we'll do a lot of football as well. Trevor Lawrence said something that, you know, I think has been twisted a little bit for sure, as to be expected. I mean, obviously, you got to generate these clicks here. But some of the comments have alarmed some in terms of maybe just the depth of his passion for the sport. We'll examine. Justin Fields sharp in his second pro day. Is there a little bit more buzz back after some early shade? And, of course, inbounds, out of bounds coming up. Hour two, hour three, lot on Jackie Robinson Day. I promise we'll get to that as well. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. No TV today, but by all means, Twitter at Tiki and Tierney. Instagram, little IG. Same thing, Tiki and Tierney, youtube.com/Tiki and Tierney. So, you know, Tiki, as time goes on, right, and there are ways we, and forget about just cheating, because it's easy to mention, like, how will we remember the steroid players? I think we already know how we're going to remember the players. We're going to classify them as cheaters.
Yeah.
And we're going to penalize them. I think there's also, if you want to get really in the weeds here, well, you know, what was it like for pitchers before they lowered the mound after the 68 season? Or what was it like? You know what I mean? Like,
I think less people think about that, though. Because I agree.
I definitely agree. I'm just trying to, like, kind of paint a picture. What was it like for,
like,
you
inflection
know,
points?
Yeah, inflection. Absolutely. You know, pitchers that have had to face the, at this point, our entire lives, you know, Ron Bloomberg, the first DH we had in studio back in the day.
That's right.
Ron Bloomberg, first DH in 73 for the A. Great guy, man. He was cool. You know, pitchers that didn't have to face a DH, you're facing a pitcher, your number's going to be better. So there's always way pivot points and lines of delineation. How do you think, and to contextualize careers, how do you think we, the sporting universe, in, say, 15 years, I think that's a fair amount of time, will we view the players who latched on to the maintenance day a lot more frequently than some of their peers? Yeah, how will that work?
The Kawhi Leonards of the world,
yep.
You know, even Paul George to an extent, Kyrie as of late. Mm-hmm. I don't think James Harden and Kyrie and KD are in this category.
I agree.
Honestly, BT, I don't think we'll remember it at all. I really don't. I think that the only way it becomes an issue is if a guy is a maintenance day type player and then he doesn't show up in the postseason. You know, if he gets there and he looks, I don't know, discombobulated and out of sorts. And it's kind of what Kawhi was like last year. But that really wasn't all his fault. Even though it partly was, because he didn't, I mean, I think, what did they play 50, not even, I think it was like 42 games they all played together. Maybe not even. I think and they had 29 different starting lineups. It was crazy, the Clippers last season, and it affected them. And so so forever, I think we'll remember that Clippers team, if they stay together, mm-hmm. as one that should have but just didn't because they had too many guys chilling, you know, half the season, right? That's when it becomes an issue, if it shows up in the postseason. If it doesn't, I don't know if we'll think about it. You know what I mean? I know we heard Russell Westbrook a couple years ago, and I think James Harden was in this conversation too, talking about, dude, I'm a baller. I want to play. I'm going to play every game. As long as I'm healthy, I'm playing every single game. And at the moment, it was like, hell yeah. I mean, you can pay $30 million a year. You better be out there playing every game. But I don't think I didn't even think about the guys that don't do that. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be remembered unless it has a lasting impact in the postseason.
I disagree. You know, not vehemently, but I disagree enough to bring a little bit of a different perspective to the table. I think what it will do, I think it will elevate some players, even if it doesn't lower those who do, you know, latch on to that, you know, weekly rest or every week, that little respite that mm-hmm. that bothers a lot of us as fans. I do think it will catapult in the eyes, the court of public opinion, those who subscribe to the opposite. If you listen, everybody knows LeBron James is great, but there are detractors. You know, he's not Jordan, or for whatever reason, you know, he's lost more times in the finals. And there's things that, you know, he wasn't a great shooter early on, blah, 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 whatever you want to. He's bounced around from different teams. He's chasing championships. I'm just saying what the detractors, what they say. I even think that maybe LeBron detractors, what it's all said and done, the fact that he always plays will force them. And I think they'll do it quite willingly, as a matter of fact. Not even begrudgingly. So force is the wrong word. Mm-hmm. They will do it naturally. They will elevate LeBron because they will have a deep appreciation, especially if this continues to permeate the sport deeper. If there's like a market correction and there's some sort of rule that's implemented and we go back to guys, you know, playing 75, 78 games a year like we used to have all the time, then that might be different. But if guys keep, you know, bailing, star players, you don't know when they're going to play. The guys who always play, the Westbrooks, the Hardens, the Durants, Durant when he's healthy.
Yeah.
And last night's different. He's coming off an Achilles and a hamstring, whatever. I'm not going to penalize him for that.
No, you can't.
Although, listen, I can't say I prefer that he would have sat the previous night against a horrible team and strapped it on against Philly. I mean, I could certainly say that, and I mean that. But I'm not going to begrudge Kevin Durant at age 31 for protecting his body. I think it's actually going to be an elevator in some cases, Teak.
Well, you know, it's interesting because think about a guy like Russell Westbrook who, let's face it, he's not winning a championship unless he just gets lucky at the end of his career and he joins a team that's already there and he's another piece, right? He's not. I don't see him winning a championship. And how will we define Russell Westbrook when it's all said and done? We know that he's a triple-double machine. What's he on, 5 in a row right now with Washington? But we know that that's devalued in a sense. So it's not like we're still marveling at the fact that Russell Westbrook does triple-doubles every night. But what we will marvel at is the dude, except when he was tore his ACL, never didn't play. And even when he was playing on a horrible team like he is right now in Washington, the dude still goes and plays. And so you know you're getting the show when it comes to Russell Westbrook. So he's got an MVP, he's a triple-double machine, and the dude was always there. So you're right in a sense. It'll elevate him to another level despite him never being a champion, if that makes sense.
It does. It does make sense here. You know, I think that it also depends on your age. I mean, what did you watch as a kid? What are you kind of conditioned to appreciate? I think if you're young, you are a product of what you're born into. I mean, you just are. I mean, you know, I don't remember. Neither do you. Obviously, I'm 2 years older than you. Just about. We do not remember because we never saw it. An NBA without the 3-point shot.
Yeah, that's right.
Where they put the line on the court in 79. We weren't watching basketball in 1978.
No.
You know?
And if I did, I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Same here, man. So I think that there's just, there's a fluidity to how we evaluate each decade, each generation. and there is some unfairness attached to the maintenance days, but there's also a lot of the criticisms levied I don't believe are unfair. I still think we're at a point now where the players owe it, not at the risk of compromising their body, but unless you are trying to recover, just sitting out a day to avoid fatigue is weak.
Yeah.
I don't care what decade it is. That's weak. You get paid a lot of money. Show up.
I agreed. And if it becomes a narrative about you, then that's when it becomes, that's when you, it starts affecting you.
That's true. All right, Teek, let's get the update from Axe, somebody who never takes a day off, except about 43 a year. We got Matt Entz coming up. He is the North Dakota State head football coach. He coaches Trey Lance. So where does Coach think Trey would be best served going? How ready is he? What kind of young man is he? We'll get the answers next. Axe update right now. Let's talk a little football about a name that, you have to know by now. Let's face it. If you don't know the name Trey Lance, I'm not going to say you don't know football. I will say that you're probably not a devout sports fan. And, I guess there's no shame in that, I guess. But, if you're into football, you know Trey Lance. You know where he's from. You know what teams are looking at him. You know what he does and skill set-wise. But we want to go behind the curtain a little bit more, probe a little bit more deeply for somebody who, based on the projections, could go top four in the draft, if that's accurate, where for the first time in NFL history, a quarterback is going to go 1-4. We will see, but we introduce Trey's coach, head coach over at North Dakota State. He is, I believe he's 19 or 20-1. He's got a championship. They are a well-oiled machine out there. They destroy people. Matt Entz, coach, with us here on Teek and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm great. Guys, I appreciate you having me on today.
Yeah, listen, man, it's an absolute pleasure. And obviously, you've been there a couple of years. You've taken the baton from what was there prior. And it is a real, real impressive setup that you have. And I want to ask you this, because the other day, Matt, Nick Saban said, to our surprise, that very few pro teams actually call college coaches to get an in-depth scouting report on a young man they may or may not draft, not just from a football point of view, but also from, how is he on campus? What kind of young man is he? Family structure. Is it different with you because Trey is not at a big time power, D1? Do a lot of coaches call you? What is that like?
Oh, we've had a fair number of coaches or assistant coaches, GMs, reach out to myself or our quarterback coach and have some meaningful conversations in regards to the football part of Trey, who Trey is as an individual, what makes him tick. But it's not something that we have every day, but there's been a fair number.
Coach, I think this has been an interesting year. Obviously, you played one game, and then you got stopped, and then you played in the spring. How odd was this year for you with your players? I mean, it's clearly unconventional, but how'd you keep everybody focused and on task and do what coaches do?
Well, the challenge started probably over 13 months ago when all of a sudden we had a halt to school. Everything became virtual. We had to put a stop to spring ball. And from that moment on, it has been, like you said, extremely unique. It's been challenging at a lot of times during the course of the last 13 or 14 months. But we've tried to do a great job as a staff, just continuing to develop those relationships with our current players and with our new recruits. The same, and just get to know them on a personal level. And that way, I think a couple things come from that. One, kids are going to play harder for you when it's 4th-and-1 because it matters. The people around them matter. And I know our coaches are going to work harder because they have a genuine appreciation for the effort and the energy that our kids give us every day.
Yeah, there you go. Go ahead, Teek.
Yeah, no, that's the important thing. I want to get to the spring season as it's going on. You guys have your last game this weekend, but take us back to the one game that you played in the regular, let's put in quotes, the regular season.
Sure.
What was the thought process behind that? Obviously you had a couple guys opt out, including Trey Lance,
yep,
after that point, but what was the thought process from having that one game in regular time?
Well, Tiki, the thought process originally was we could have had 3 games per our league kind of amendum to the schedule. We knew we were going to play a conference-only schedule in the spring, and so we scoured the country to to try to find three games. It wasn't just a game. And a lot of people, you know, misconstrued the one game that it was a showcase for our NFL guys. No, it was meant to be a showcase for the Bison and for us to continue to get better. We knew that we had a young roster, and we wanted to get as many practices in as possible. And I saw it as an opportunity to get 30-plus practices in the fall because I knew I was going to get them again back in the spring because of the scheduled season.
Yeah.
And again, we called over 100 NCAA Division I institutions looking for games. And, thank goodness Central Arkansas was looking for a game as well. But we would have loved to have played two more.
Yeah. Well, hold on, Coach. So you called 100, you played one, so that means you're one for 100, which if you're playing baseball, you're not getting out of low A ball. Is that because I've got my theories. I just think teams that are higher than you in terms of the on Division I on the pecking order, they don't want to risk being embarrassed. I mean, is that fair?
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the reasoning behind it. I know a lot of it was due to, the pandemic and COVID. Unfortunately, our location doesn't make it easily accessible to get to a game. I mean, of course, we were going to have to fly somewhere. And at that time, there was a lot of a lot of other leagues that were either canceling seasons, trying to get seasons going again. It was about the same time that you saw the Big Ten halt their season. And so there was just a lot of unknown, and that's what I'm going to chalk most of it up to.
I got you. Very classy answer.
I know what rabbit hole you were trying to get me to go.
Yeah, you're bludgeoning people, Coach. Come on now. We know what it's all about.
And by the way, Matt, listen, Coach, the rabbit hole, if I got something to ask, I'd just come out and ask it, Coach.
Yeah,
I'm not beating around the bush, man. I believe you. I believe you partially. We're talking to Matt Entz, the head coach at North Dakota State. And by the way, I think I misspoke before. I said Nick Saban when I asked if coaches have called you from the NFL. I believe it was actually Lane Kiffin, so I just wanted to set that straight. Let me ask you this, Matt. The perception, all right, and I think I subscribe to this, to be fair. The general perception is, as great as Trey Lance is in terms of the toolbox, he's got a rocket, his intellect has been put it really illuminated, which I love to hear. It processes things quickly, big athlete, big arm, etc. But the general consensus is very raw, not ready to play as a rookie. Do you disagree with that? Do you believe that he can step in right away and play?
I'm not going to, I guess, go out on a limb and say he can. But if there's a young man that has the ability and the intellectual know-how to get prepared to do it, it would be Trey Lance. I think ever since probably his high school days in Marshall, Minnesota, when he was a quarterback, everyone's been telling him that he can't do it. And he continually has proved people wrong. Came here and learned our offense. And guys, we like to at least think that we emulate NFL offense the way we go about our business. We have a wordy offense. I mean, there's a lot of verbiage to our offense. We're under center. We're in the gun. Our quarterback he has to be able to get us in and out of the right play, the right protections. We put a lot on him, and he came in and was able to be a sponge to Easton Stick, to Randy Hedberg, our quarterback coach, Tyler Roll, our offensive coordinator, and he just saw his growth and development every day. 2019, if you go back and watch, very little trade shift in motion early in the season. By the end of the season, we were trade shift in motion. There was probably a handful of snaps in a game we didn't trade shift in motion. And that was because Trey just became accustomed to getting people in and understood how defenses would rotate and the new picture that he might see.
Yeah, Coach, it's almost like you're becoming quarterback you. We all remember that Carson Wentz was back there in 2015, and we've seen where his career has gone. Great, start to it. Obviously, it's a cluster in Philadelphia, and now that you've learned a little bit more about what went on behind the scenes, it's he's probably in a better place in Indianapolis. Yep. But when you think about, the recruitment of quarterbacks, the development of quarterbacks that you guys have done, I guess the question I'd ask as now putting my scout hat on, my analyst hat on,
sure,
come the NFL season, what are his strengths and what are the things he needs to work on? Talking not Carson Wentz, obviously, who you know as well, yeah, but obviously Trey Lance.
Right. Well, I think his strengths are his ability to grasp concepts and to see the game. He sees the game at a much slower pace than maybe what a young 19, 20-year-old typically would. Has a strong arm, can make all the throws, can make the throws back to the field. I think he proved that in his pro day that he had here just a couple, three, four weeks ago. You know, the one thing that I would say that he has to continue to work on, and I know he's put in the time, especially while he's been away from NDSU, you know, he probably had a little bit longer or deliberate delivery when he was in college. And so I know just from talking to him this week, he was working on his mechanics, still always working on something, always trying to get better, find that edge. And so, you know, that would be the one thing that I would say. Of course, everyone's going to say inexperience, but you got to get it somewhere. And I know whoever gets him in the NFL is going to have a great prospect there.
So speaking of that, and we're talking to Matt Entz, the head coach, North Dakota State, power program. You know that by now. Trey Lance is going to be one of the top picks in the draft here. You know, you go as much as you're comfortable with here. And listen, you've got a lot of intel. I'm sure you know which teams really, really like Trey, which are, you know, which like him, which maybe aren't fully sold. In your heart, coach, even if you don't divulge the team, do you have a sense of not only what team might take him, but where he will go in the draft, number-wise?
You know, you'd asked me this a month ago. I thought I had it pegged. But since then, there's been some trades and some movement, of course, by NFL personnel that has adjusted kind of the order of the draft. And so I thought I was pretty confident 3-4 weeks ago, but then I do know Trey is planning to have a second throwing session coming up this Monday, the 19th of April, and so it'll be interesting to see who attends. I know there's 3 or 4 teams that have already mentioned that they'll be there. So I think a lot of teams right now, and you're getting to see it firsthand. We see it firsthand. They play things. They keep their cards a lot closer to the vest than what you anticipate NFL teams doing.
Yeah. Who is the team you thought it was going to be a couple of weeks ago?
You know, I thought there was a good chance it might have been Carolina.
Interesting. I've been saying Carolina for a couple of weeks now that it's the 49ers. They moved up to take him. Jimmy Garoppolo tutored him for a year, and he's good
and
to go.
This was all pre.
Yeah, that trade.
Pre-movement and things. And so, again, each team's got to do what's best for them. They all know their situation, of course, better than I do. That was just kind of some – I was taking a whim there.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, appreciate
Coach,
you throwing a name out there.
I wish we had more time because I'd ask you, what the hell happened in week 22? It's your first loss in like 3 years, but we're up against it. In week 29, you guys play your last game of the season against San Diego State. Good luck, Coach. Thanks for hopping on and giving some intel on Trey Lance. And we look forward to watching your last game of the season this weekend.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, really enjoyed it, Matt. Thanks a lot, Coach. Appreciate you, buddy. Yeah, that was good. Good stuff. Of course, I'm going to follow up and ask him. I didn't think he was going to throw a team out. You got to listen, and that's how you ask the good follow ups. You got to listen.
Hey,
I didn't think he was going to say Carolina.
Yeah,
good for him.
So Carolina's picking where now? So they gave up. No, they don't have a first.
No, Carolina's still in the 8th spot. Remember, they just gave up
a second, a fourth, and a sixth. That's right. I mean, they could still draft him.
That's true.
You never know.
That's true.
If he falls that far.
Well, we know Trevor Lawrence ain't falling, but he said something that raised a couple of ears and eyebrows. We'll hit that coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.